Hello, this is Chaz from Quiet Speculation, and you're listening to the QS Cast. If you're a QS subscriber, you're hearing this as soon as it gets published. If you're not a subscriber, you had to wait a few days. If you want to listen to the podcast as soon as it's published, or you just want to know more about Quiet Speculation, go to quietspeculation.com/tour and check out everything we have to offer. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the QS Cast. The great times are rolling. We have another Vendor Series cast, so really excited for this cast. We've been alluding to it for the last few weeks. CEO and owner of ABU Games, Gabriel Wilson, is joining us. Hey, Gabe, how's it going?
It's doing very well, thank you.
We're so happy to have you on the cast. Thank you for giving us some time and joining us on the cast. This is going to be awesome. Really, everyone loves these Vendor Series, and we're just happy to have you.
Great.
Tarkan, what's up?
Hey, how's it going, everyone? just to echo Chaz, Gabe, we're amped to have you. This is another big one. You know, last week we did Channel Fireball, and you know, we were like, hey, it's going to be a double hitter with having you on and talking about ABU. So thank you so much. We really, really, really appreciate it. Everyone loves these, and thank you so much for coming on.
Sure.
Yep, I've used ABU for quite some time now. Always loved the service, so really happy to do the cast. And we have we kind of have just this outline that we're going to stick to. Hopefully we can get through it all with you, Gabe. So we're going to love to hear your feedback. And Tarkan, if you want to start us off.
Yeah, yeah. Gabe, basically, maybe you can just kind of give us an introduction to yourself, how you started in the business, and sort of the foundation of ABU up to kind of where you are now, and just kind of give us a little bit of background for some of the listeners that might not be aware.
Sure. So, you know, it's a really hard thing to understand when my business started or when it was just my personal collection. I started playing Magic in high school, my sophomore year of high school in like 1993, and I loved it. It was like the greatest thing I had ever come across. It was everything I could have asked for in a hobby. I loved playing the game. I loved collecting the cards. And back then, it wasn't about really who is the best player. It was about who had the cards. And it was not easy to come across the cards. So my number one focus was build my collection, because that's how I was going to be able to win. And I loved the cards anyway, so I wanted to have them all. And I'd always been a kind of a collector of things anyway, so this kind of hit everything for me. So I was just, at first, you know, just trying to build up my collection to have the everything. And it all, you know, at some point, this was actually before the internet, basically. So the cards didn't really have value. They just had, when you were trading with people, it wasn't like your card's worth $5, my card's worth $8 or what have you. It was, I want that card. Here's the cards I have. Do you want any of the ones I have?
Yeah.
But then it all pretty much changed at one point when basically eBay started getting popular. Actually the site I wasn't, it was basically an auction site that I was using. It wasn't eBay, but it was about the same time. There was a few little smaller guys. There was nobody that was really the main one at the time. But anyways, once that started though, then I was able to actually turn the cards into actual money. And that just changed everything. Cause then no longer was I just trying to trade for the cards I wanted. I would just trade because I was getting better value than what I was giving away. So I knew if I just got more than what I was giving, then I could sell it and turn those into whatever cards I wanted. So, you know, I don't know, maybe like I did that for 5 or 6 years after I started, and then maybe then it turned into a kind of a business.
Wow. So literally we call them backpack grinders. You were a grinder that kind of moved into this, you know, what has now become ABU.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wow, that's interesting. So, I mean, you pretty much pioneered that.
Well, I have a pretty unique ability to stay focused and do the same, like, and continue with whatever I'm into. And so, and yeah, I what can I say? I guess I was pretty decent, good at trading and remembering every single price at the time. I remember, you know, being able to go through people's cards. I mean, I see people at shows do it now. It's not like it's a big deal, I guess, but it was being able to remember every little detail and know every little angle is a skill that really you need to be a good, I guess, value trader. But it's so much different now. It was like the Wild West back then, because there was no vendor booths. You go to a tournament and there was cash flying everywhere. Everyone was trading with everybody. No one cared. It wasn't like you have to, you know, I don't know. It's just so much different. It was pretty cool.
It was a lot different, even from when I remember first starting the game. But I mean, that's impressive. I mean, when you basically are relying on, I mean, I don't even know, was like Scry Magazine or anything like that around at that point? Like, it was basically it.
Mm-hmm. Were you using the magazine prices at all? Was there any point when those, because, you know, like Inquest and that, sort of stuff, was that the foundation there that you were using? Or, you know, were you even skirting around that?
Well, for sure there was a point where people were using Scry Magazine, but it was so much less well known, where you might have use that as more information for yourself, but there's no expectation that the person you were trading with had ever heard of Scry Magazine or have a clue about pricing. Again, this is the very early years, and it's interesting because, like, at some point I converted, you know, everything into the online stuff, and now it's all done through my buy list. I don't even go to tournaments anymore. I very rarely travel. I guess I'm basically spoiled. I put all my energy and effort into making the online thing work, so I wouldn't have to go to all the tournaments and things. And honestly, I don't know if it's the best strategy. I do think that there's opportunities. Obviously, there's tons of people that go to the tournaments and do the vending booths and such, but it's not the avenue I've went, I guess.
Interesting. So can you kind of tell us a little bit more about what the transition was like? So you went from trader to grinder, then eBay grinder, and then at what point did it turn into, like, at least the, you know, the tipping point to moving into, like, ABU that we know them now, and then growing to where at what point did you become, like, the ABU games that we, you know, we kind of all know now?
Yeah, it's so hard. So, I mean, my business started in at one room of my apartment, and then at one point me and my wife bought a house, and then we had the business out of our attic area, and then we built a side building of that house and put the business in there, you know, had one or two employees, and then we moved. We were in the Portland area, and we moved to Boise, Idaho. That's where we're located now. And again, when we first moved to Boise, this was like about 11 years ago, we were at, I was running the business out of a basement. Wow. And then about, I guess, was it, I think it was 2007, I believe, we finally moved the business outside of the house and into a retail / warehouse type situation. And that was about 7,500 square feet building. So we had our first retail store then. And honestly, the main reason I did the retail store was to get wholesale accounts. You couldn't get the products that I wanted to carry, the supplies, the magic boxes and stuff. It was always such a hassle to try to convince wholesalers to sell to you when you're saying you're out of your basement. They just didn't respect that as a company, I guess. So, but once we had the store, then it just opened up all those opportunities to get the wholesale accounts, and we're now legitimate. And then when we did that, we first were going to do video games, movies. I don't know if you guys are familiar with Hastings as a company. You guys know that?
Yeah, business? Absolutely.
They just went out of business, but.
Yep. Yeah, they did. Yeah, they did.
But I really like that company. I really like movies and video games myself. And so I thought I could branch off into that in the retail area, but that ended up not working out well for me. We tried renting video games and movies, and it was just, that's a whole nother story. But basically that we discontinued that after a few years. And then we were running the retail store just with magic and board games. And then it, it really, actually, at first, it was really rough when we were doing the movies and things. And I really questioned if it was worth having the retail store. But as soon as we got rid of the video games and really focused on just the gaming stuff, we were able to turn it around. It didn't hurt that I got a retail manager that was really passionate about board games and retail in general. Because I've never really enjoyed the retail aspect of it. I always just wanted to be doing the online stuff. So having somebody in place that could really take that and did an excellent job, and is continues and making the retail store really good. So now the retail store is actually a really great income stream and business for part of ABU Games, which is actually surprises me. I never expected it to.
Interesting.
So that's really incredible. Yeah. I'm just listening to this story. It's just incredible. I mean, you know, we've talked to other vendors, and I just don't think like they've had that kind of journey where you basically started yourself, and it's like everyone's dream of, like, I mean, I don't know if everyone's dream, but it certainly was successful that you know, that's how you started and you kind of took the steps. I don't think, you know, you hear that too often. It's mostly just, you know, a band of people kind of get together and then, you know, the rest is history. I mean, you really kind of built it from the ground up. I mean, from your own house, your living quarters, to, you know, moving, and then just finally the retail space, I think is, you know, it's a humbling story. And I think it's really, really incredible. I mean, really, thanks. Congrats to you. That's really awesome.
So I guess now we're into the current chapter. We moved from that location to our current location, which is 44,000 square feet. So, and that we did about two years ago. And it's been a lot of work getting this place ready and moving the retail store and getting it all set up. And now we have, luckily now we're basically in a setup phase of ABU again, where I've put everything, all my efforts into this new website we're building, put all the efforts into this new retail and warehouse, cause it wasn't in very good shape. We were able to get a good price on it but it had a lot of remodeling to do. And so we're in the middle of that too. So we're rebuilding. It's a very another very interesting time in ABU Games, I guess.
Oh, awesome. New website, huh? You heard it here first. You heard it here first.
Yeah.
Ah, that's actually really exciting.
Yeah, we obviously, ABU Games is completely overdue for a remodel of the website. Anybody that's, I don't know what everyone else's opinion of ABU Games is, but I assume if I was an outsider, I would think, wow, these guys have an incredible selection, but why does it take me 2 minutes to open up an alpha page?
You know, I have used the site. It's, I guess it works. You know, I've never had
it
a
works.
Real.
It, yeah, it works. It feels a little dated, but that never prevents me from using it.
Right. No. Yeah. For sure. No. But no. Seriously, though, I you know, it does have its issues, but it's never been enough to be like, oh, I'm definitely not using this. I've used it quite a bit.
I think the current ABU Games proves that its content is king, right? It's more important that we have what people are looking for than having it work absolutely perfect. But
yeah,
there's no, I mean, obviously I'm not content with that. That's a whole nother story of why it's the way it is. But essentially, yes, we are very, very close to rolling out a brand new website, which I'm hoping will be just far, far better than any other experience you could have online at a magic shop. It's fully custom to ABU Games. It's not using anybody else's software.
Awesome.
We're going to have some features and things that that you just won't be able to find anywhere else.
So I'm curious, kind of speaking to that, was it just a situation where what you had was working so well? I'm guessing that's what it was. And it was like there was no need to change. And do you now feel that the market has evolved to a point where you kind of need to make this change? Or is this simply because, you know, enough people have said, hey, the site feels a little old?
Well,
like, I'm curious what prompted this. Was it market forces or was it customer? Or, you know, what sort of caused all the shift?
Well, It's a really long and complicated story why ABU is where it is, having to do with relationship with programmers and different things. And but I guess the best way to put it is I have requirements and things that I want a website to do that no one else does. And I'm not going to I can't explain all those things. A lot of them are proprietary ideas. But basically, there's no way that I can use some other like off the shelf website program to achieve the things that I want. And the current ABU does a lot of those things, but it wasn't built in a way that was it wasn't scalable. So it reached a point where I could not make additional changes to it without significantly taking a chance of breaking the whole thing. And I can't go with any other service. For one thing, I want to have my website different than everybody else. If I was to use some website that that another vendor offered to lots of other people, I wouldn't want to give them my ideas because then everyone else has my ideas. Sure. Because of that, it's ridiculously expensive. It's a ridiculous amount of time to get what you want. So that's kind of where we're at. Why it's taking so long is I could have had a site that's similar to what other people have, but it wouldn't be any better. It wouldn't, you know, it would function better than what I currently have for speed wise and things. But so that's why I was willing to, I guess, take the time to do it right.
Well, I mean,
but never any harm in that.
I know you're just yeah. I know you're just teasing, but I mean that's super exciting. I mean, when you talk about things that, you know, unique features that you don't see from other vendors, I mean that's that only makes me I'm just like, I can't wait. When is this thing coming, you know?
Yeah, it's so we're really close. I would say within the next 2 to 3 months we should be launching. It could be faster, but my experience has shown it never goes like you want. So on our current timeline, we're scheduled to go live in 2 months from now. So there's no, that just never happens. So let's hope for 3 months. I can go over a few of I wrote down a few of the key things if you want to hear about
them. Sure, absolutely.
So it's going to have, you know, it's going to, obviously we're going to be up to date on speed, and the look of the site is going to be good for mobile and for any size web or browser you're using. So it's going to be designed specifically for whatever you're using going to the site for. It won't just be one massive page that you have to scroll around on to use. Hopefully it'll work really smoothly on whether you're on iPad, iPhone, or what have you, you know. It'll have really good filtering, so you'll be able to find exactly what you're looking for, whether that's just looking for, I want to see all the cards at a certain price point, or I want to see all the cards that are a certain color. And I guess that's a simple, but things like I want to see just signed cards, or I want to see all graded cards, or I want to see all cards that are elves by Drew Tucker, or whatever type of combination of filtering you could think of we're putting into this thing. And it's all should be like lightning quick. So when whatever you do will come up right away. Let's see. So obviously we're going to have the up to date with current things like notify and wish list type things.
Awesome.
Anything basically on the other sites that are kind of like normal for other sites that we've been lacking, we're going to have, hopefully. We'll be able to have better account management so people can keep track of their credit. It feels almost silly to say these things because they're so basic to basic to e-commerce these days. But stuff that ABU Games has been lacking, we're certainly going to have now. So I guess for Go Live, we're kind of been putting most of our effort into the basic shopping and all the things that you would expect from a really high-end e-commerce site. But then, so down the line, we have a lot of great ideas for one of the big things is we're going to have a deck building resource where you can build your decks, save them on your account, and then you'll be able to very quickly, if you wanted to buy that deck, you could customize which exact cards you'd want to be included, which edition, whether it be foil or not, and immediately it'll tell you what that price would be to buy it. You could add it all to the cart. You could choose which conditions of the cards you wanted. So you could just customize the deck exactly how you'd like it to be.
Oh, wow.
And push one button, boom, everything goes in the cart.
That's really cool.
Yeah, that's great. So you put it together and you're like, you know what? I just want all slightly played cards. Boom.
Sure.
And it'll just spit out, you know, what you need.
Yep. Yeah. And we're hoping that it'll have, you could even choose the language, whatever, like a version of the card is possible that we sell, you'll be able to select that. And then, and each one individually will say which the prices are there on it. So individually you'll be able to see, and then you could see the overall price, what it would be.
Oh, wow, that's neat. But,
yeah. So then, and so we'll have that. And then another thing, it'll be, collection manager. So people will be able to, put in their cards that they have. And they can either use it as just a resource to keep track of what they have, so they could log into that and see what they have available, which is part of their collection, keep track of it. But then on top of that, it'll show you prices that you could sell everything. So I'll have our buy list price next to everything. Or what if you wanted to, say you wanted to add to your collection cards you don't have, you could mark them as, I want these, and then you could easily see what it would cost to buy them, and it'd be similar to the deck building program where, you know, you'll see all the options. And again, I decide now I do want to go for it. I'm going to buy these cards, push one button, and all the cards get added to your cart.
Wow. That's super cool.
Yeah. And all that is going to be, you know, possible with a really quick, fast, indexing of the card. So everything is immediate. There won't be any like load times and things, because it'll already be, you know, loaded in, I guess.
Man, it's the slow takeover of ABU. Oh, wow, that's awesome. Well, that's very, very, very cool, man. So you're thinking, you know, about approximately 3 months, we can probably expect to see this thing kind of going live.
Yeah, and then I don't know what the timeline for additional features like the deck builder and the collection thing, but those are certainly coming. I don't have I wouldn't be able to give you a timeline on that, but the cool thing is we have a full-time web developer on staff now, and he's not going anywhere once the website goes live or anything like that. So we will be continuing to add features, be able to change things around, and just continue to make the site. We really want it to take whatever you could get from, say, the Gatherer, and just way better, you know. So we want it to be the destination for building your decks. You're looking at different cards, just being able to view things however you want. If you just want to see the pictures of everything, like a spoiler view, or if you want to see the details of everything, where you're, what's the casting cost and what's the flavor text and all that in text form, you'll be able to have that. If you want to just a checklist. So all these little resources, we want ABU Games to be the destination for all your Magic resources.
Wow. So I'm curious then, is anything, so with this big sort of overhaul of the site and this new evolution, is anything going to change on the back end? Like any of the kind of the standardized ABU policies or anything that's been going on with you guys now?
Yeah.
Is there going to be some things that there's going to be updates or changes that are going to come with the way things are done? Or is it just going to be kind of business as usual?
Yeah. No. We have a really exciting thing to that we're going to be employing for trades. So, you know, ABU Games, we realized a while ago that people love to trade their cards. They like to sell them too, but a lot of people, they don't, it's not about they were getting rid of their cards because they don't want to play anymore. It's they want different cards, and they're willing to take a little bit of a hit on their value if they can quickly and easily get what they want. And so there's a big breakdown, unfortunately, between cash value and trade credit values in the industry. Everybody I know just does a flat percentage. And ABU Games does it too. I'm not saying that we have it solved, but the new website has a much, much better way to handle trades when it comes to trading for singles. So it wasn't, ABU Games, for the longest time, you could trade in your cards and get credit towards sealed product or singles or whatever, anything in the store. But the problem was booster boxes and sealed product is so close to cash. The cost of a box is almost what you're selling it for. There's very little markup involved. So to give a really large, but I was very willing to give a better trade value if you're going to take singles. So there has to be, but the problem, so I had to disconnect, I guess, between the sealed product from the singles in trades, but it still wasn't good. I don't like the current setup. It still doesn't feel right. So in the new website, it has this really cool feature, which no one else has, which is basically we are going to give a cash value in for your cards or a trade value in cards. And they're not going to be linked based on a certain percentage. Because when we have a bunch of a card in, we just basically can't afford to give more cash, give a good cash value for a card. If you have hundreds of a certain card, you just can't tie up cash into it anymore. So if your cash price goes down, then you're not going to be giving a good trade for it either, which is not fair to your customers. So if we can disassociate those two numbers, then we can always give a good trade value, no matter how many we have in stock. Our cash value at times might be low because we have a bunch in stock, but our trade is always going to be good. So there's going to be times when we might be giving $1 in cash for a card and $4 in trade for that card for, like, say, a $5 card, something like that. So I think this is going to really revolutionize the trading in of cards to an established company, because no longer is it going to be at times where you just can't get anything for your real good cards. It has nothing to do with the value of the card. It's just that company happens to have a ton of them in stock. That just doesn't seem right. We always want to give a good trade value. So now we are still going to get, so now that since they're going to be disassociated, we're going to be able to offer a really good trade in value at all times. That's the goal.
Interesting.
My jaw literally dropped.
So let's talk about this a little bit more. So basically, from what I'm hearing, then, is there going to be kind of a real time? So cash value could fluctuate at any time based on your inventory. So let's say let's say there's a buyout. I hate to use that word, but it happens. Sure. Let's just acknowledge. Let's go to the extreme example. And suddenly everybody's all over the internet buying everything, and they buy a card. They buy you out of a card, and your stock drops. Is there going to be a real-time shift in the cash price? That's what I'm curious. Like, if you experience a buyout, and you don't know if it's based in demand or not. Is you have an algorithm that's automatically going to shift the cash price, but the trade price is going to stay fixed? Is that kind of what we're talking about here, or how does that kind of work? Maybe you have a little more color. You can add a little more color to the description.
Well, the best way to put it is when we have very few of a card in stock, we're going to pay a really good cash value because we really need it, and we're going to be giving a really good trade value. When we have a ton of the card in stock, we probably aren't going to be giving the best cash value, but we're still going to be giving a great trade-in value. So, we will probably be giving a better trade value when we're really low, but we'll still be giving a really good trade value when we have a lot in stock versus how it is where now, where if we have a ton of the card, we're going to be giving a bad cash and bad trade. So that's the difference, I guess.
And is that going to be automated? So, like, the prices, you know, you're not going to be manually tracking prices, or is your system going to be handling all that automation to figure out, okay, now we're low, so price is going to shift to this percentage? Like, system's going to do all that for you?
Well, we have a procedure that how we handle it, but it's not something that I usually share.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah, cool. No, but those prices are going to basically based in inventory, but the trade in price is always going to be what you would consider an attractive price and not based on just a flat percentage.
Exactly. And so we still want to offer a trade-in value or an ability for people to trade in their stuff for sealed boxes. So I haven't figured out the exact percentage I'm going to offer, but I think it's going to be something like 20 or 25% that you can get above the cash price towards trade towards anything in the store. That will always be available. So you can always, when you're, if you want to get booster boxes, you could always, you can trade for them in and get a trade bonus above it. But it's most likely not going to be as good a trade value as if you're trading, taking the singles trade credit number, if that makes sense.
Yeah, cool. So if we can kind of step backwards now, because that is awesome, and it's super cool to see how, like, the whole process evolved. Yeah. And this evolution is, it's really, really, really fascinating to look, because I mean, honestly, I think for the longest time, you guys have been like best in class for buy list credit, trading credit. And this really speaks to the philosophy that you were just talking about you really wanting to encourage people to take credit and trade and sort of using it as a means of fostering the sense of this trade environment. So can you kind of explain how you began and evolved your buy list trade credit model? Because again, I mean, first it was ABU is 35%. That just blows everybody out of the water. Mm-hmm. And then you guys, when it moved up to 50%, and literally, I mean, I remember on Twitter being like, really? Is this real? Like, is ABU really doing this? And everyone was like, yeah, I mean, they're literally offering 50%. So can you kind of speak on that? Like, at what point did you go, okay, like, we know the value in credit. Were you kind of ahead on that? You know, did you see that, okay, the trade in credit model is something that we want to always be ahead on? And then how did that evolve into your, you know, 50% now and then moving into your new model?
Yeah, we'd love to hear that.
I guess the thing is, I consider people that buy cards from us or people that trade in cards to us as great customers is the key to it. I give as much respect to the person selling me a few cards as the person buying for me some cards. They are both great customers of mine. And I know that people love to trade. They're not looking to get out of the game. They just want different things. And they shouldn't get just totally hammered when they want to trade one card for another. Because all it's essentially costing ABU is some time to take those cards in, inventory them, and, you know, the cost of shipping them out. So it's not something we need to hammer the customer on. And they are. The people trading are great customers to us. Our inventory goes up. We have more cards available. So we respect that. And we want to make that experience for them something that's very positive. And so there's just no need to have, especially on trades, there isn't a need to have as high a margin.
Interesting. And so then what made the shift from the 35 to the 50%? Because, I mean, that was a huge – when you guys made that change, it was huge. What was it that sort of that moved in your mind and went, okay, like we need to really – like, let's just do this. Was it literally a customer service move, or was it something else that you said, you know what, I think it's time that we kind of blow it out of the water with our credit offering?
It basically came down to, I couldn't give that kind of margin when I'm paying cash. It just, the cash flow wouldn't support it. I wanted to, I felt like I could come down on my margins some to make it more appealing to people to trade or to trade in, basically. But I couldn't. I couldn't increase the cash because I knew it wouldn't work. So that was pretty much it. I just knew that I wanted to focus more on that. That's where I realized that what the problem with that structure was that people were starting to just take boxes like crazy. And that was basically almost like taking cash. So I had to make that adjustment so that you could only trade for singles. And that's kind of how I came on the other idea of like differentiating the values and such so that, because it's silly to think that you can't trade into our store and get any sealed product. That's not the way it should be. But our system just isn't set up so that you can take a smaller percentage for when you're trading it for sealed boxes, I guess. But we will be able to in the new one.
Cool. That is awesome. Cool. I can't wait. I really can't wait. This is great news. And so we talked a little bit about, you know, the building the website and if that may change kind of the operational structure, and we discussed that. Can we shift into, I think we kind of were, you know, you were touching on this and why you kind of changed some of your policies, but I mean, you told us the story. How is being now a large vendor? I mean, you're now a large vendor. You know, I know you started in a basement, but you're a large business now. Is it becoming more difficult? Like, I know you talked about some of the changes. Is that because, you know, you're such a large vendor? And kind of maybe some issues you ran into or just kind of the online presence versus, you know, you also have a large, you know, brick and mortar. How does that come into play a little bit? Like, is there certain things that you may have done differently if you were just, you know, did you want to be in the online space no matter what? You know, is that kind of, you have to use that resource? Maybe if you could touch a little bit upon that.
So let me, I'm trying to.
Yeah, it's a lot.
Exactly what you're asking for.
I mean, is it becoming more difficult? Yeah. Like, do you maybe feel like, you know, you have to take, you know, you talked about some of these new features that you're talking about. Is this because, you know, there's just a lot more competition popping up? Maybe that wasn't around in the past.
I do think that things are more competitive these days. There's more avenues for the average, I don't want to call it, just somebody that wants to sell a few cards and maybe not be a huge business. This is a part-time thing. They have the avenues now to make a presence online, and a lot of people are taking advantage of that. So the prices are far more competitive than they ever been. And it's like, you can't really, there isn't much you can do with the prices, I guess. They are what they are. There's a current going rate that things are selling for, and that's just the way it is.
So I guess, so there's Gabe that started off bootstrapping in his basement and has seen the evolution of the marketplace to now. And now we have TCG Player, which is obviously a behemoth in the e-commerce space. We have all these new stores. We have a new LGS popping up every other week. You have the Backpackers. If you were Gabe now, if a kid came up to you and was like, "Hey Gabe, I want to start off my basement. I want to build an ABU." Would you recommend the brick and mortar outlet, or would you say, "Listen, you know, these days focus on building an online presence, then look at the brick and mortar?" Or would you say, "Yeah, you know what? Go ahead, get your brick and mortar going. Make sure you have some." How would you recommend, you know, how do you think the marketplace is now if someone was trying to come into it as a small business and said they have a dream of being the next ABU? Would you even recommend it at all?
You know, it's tough because it's hard for me to put my mind wrapped around that, because I, you know, obviously I'm thinking about my situation all the time. But to do the things that I want to do certainly requires much more ability to put money into things, I guess. I have the website that gets all the cards that I need in through the buy list. That's not something the average person can just throw up. If I was to start now, it would be really rough. I'm not sure exactly what I would advise. And plus now, like I said, when I was started going to tournaments, you could just buy and sell on the floor and it didn't matter. But now everyone's locked out of that, so you can only trade with the vendors. You can't. So it's tough to be an up and comer now, I would imagine.
So you think so it sounds like from what I'm hearing then is that you think a main issue is really inventory, right? Like, how are you going to keep yourself flush with the inventory you need to constantly be kind of
I guess I can share this, but I really think the one of the main reasons that our retail store is doing well is because it's attached to this huge warehouse of inventory that you couldn't just open up a retail store, and you wouldn't have that resource at your, you know, right there, right next to you. And that's the reason why I only have one location. I don't know how a second location would work, because people love to come to our store because they can get everything that they want going up to the front counter and saying, "I want these particular things." How would you do that if you're starting out and your customers wouldn't be able to do that? I don't know. That's why I haven't opened a second store either. It's a weird industry to start into, for sure.
Do you feel that brick and mortar is still, you know, healthy? The brick and mortar retail business?
For me, it certainly is. Our store here in Boise is just doing awesome. We have a great customer base. You know, I think we do a really good job at our retail store. We respect our customers and treat them well and all that stuff. We try to give them the best service as possible. But everyone else tries to do the same thing too. But
do you host tournaments? Do you guys have is it sort of a community build? You know, it's not just by retail, but, you know, you guys have a gaming community.
Yeah, yeah. We have a pretty big, we have like a, I don't know, 3,000 or 4,000 square foot gaming area. Plus we have an overflow section that's 8,000 square feet. So we run a lot of tournaments, and we do a lot of other stuff besides Magic. We do Warhammer, and we even have some video game tournaments now, and we do, you know, miniatures, X-Wing, then we have board games, and we do the tabletop game days and all that kind of stuff. So we support a lot more than just Magic, although Magic certainly is the number one game.
It is. Interesting.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. That's cool. That's good to hear.
Yeah. And, you know, and thank goodness for EDH.
Yeah, no, it's become quite the phenomenon. I mean, from when I started to now, I mean, I got a little bit of time to really jam a lot of games over this past summer. Usually the summers I get a lot more time to play, which is kind of like contradictory, but guess that's being a teacher. But I mean, every time I would go in, like packed, I mean, packed to the literal can't even seat one more person, Commander Knight, like every time without fail.
Yep. It's I mean, great.
This has really been incredible.
Mm-hmm. And that's a shift, right, Gabe? Like, because we, you know, a lot of us started off playing at the same time, and I remember, I mean, you could probably, you know, reiterate this, but back in like the late 90s, early 2000s, even in the mid 2000s, it was all the like tournament scene, like the Pro Tour and being competitive Magic drove a lot of the game. And that's completely seen a huge shift over the past, like, what, maybe 4 or 5 years, you would say?
Yeah,
maybe
certainly.
Even longer. Maybe longer.
Definitely. There are certainly those people that, let's put it this way. We don't even run the regional qualifiers right now. We don't have a judge in the area, and I don't even really care. It's not that big of a deal. I mean, we'd like to offer them, and we are always seeing how are we going to do this, because we'd like to offer the regional qualifier stuff. But it, honestly, I don't think it's that big of a deal. The casual EDH is just people like it more. And we do support standard Friday Night Magic. We do standard. We do drafts and not to say that the people aren't into tournaments, but it's a lot better when all your cards are useful to you, not just whatever's currently the hot deck.
Totally. And you know, it's funny because in this little corner of you know, the world of the guys on the ground level who are buying and trading and doing all that, you know, there's been a noticeable difference and change in, you know, focus on casual. You know, it used to be, okay, you know, you pick up, you know, specs that you thought were going to, you know, pop during tournaments, and that's still the case, but you know, we've seen, especially Chaz and I have, we've actually talked about this since we've been doing the cast. Over the past couple of years, it's just the move. I mean, there's been a noticeable shift in demand towards casual cards. I mean, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, I feel like it really happened when Wizards decided to stop doing qualifiers and doing these regional things. I know a lot of people that were into trying to grind and become on the Pro Tour. And as soon as they switched it, and you couldn't just go to a tournament locally and win it and go to the Pro Tour, that a lot of them just stopped caring. They just figured out this is just too hard now, and they gave up. So I really think that was a bad choice for Wizards of the Coast. I'm not sure. I don't know. I can't. I usually err on the side that Wizards knows what they're doing. Anybody that can keep this game a game going for this long, they're not idiots, but they're not perfect either. So I don't know. It's hard to say. I mean, the problem is Magic is so dang big now that you can't just have a tournament that qualifies you for the Pro Tour all over the place. You'd have 1,000, 2,000 person Pro Tours, right? So what are they going to do? They have to do something that makes it harder to get in, but by making it harder, it turns a lot of people off. So I don't know what the answer is. But I do feel like that was kind of that was the moment that, for me, where I noticed a shift in the tournament.
That was probably a big one. I think maybe just a lot of the people that started kind of even back then, and me looking at myself and you, Tark, and probably yourself, Gabe, I mean, a lot of us are just getting older. I mean, I think that people don't want to realize that, or people don't want to accept that, but I mean, we're not like teenagers anymore. We're not, and you know, we haven't really, I've never really talked about this with anyone before, and it's never came up, but I mean, you have a generation kind of Magic players getting older, and we just don't, I mean, Gabe or Tark, I mean, at your age, do you want to start going out and grinding for a Pro Tour? I mean, even if you really wanted to do it, I mean, it's definitely not going to happen, right?
Yeah.
Well, it's certainly not a monetary plus situation.
Right, though, yeah. I mean, I think that's just, I mean, obviously there's a huge part of that too, like you said, where they kind of, you're right. They made it harder for a lot of people, and a lot of people are like, you know what, this is just a grind. I don't really want to do it anymore. But I mean, a lot of those people are, again, you know, you kind of bring it to the factor of they're getting older, but at the same time, that's they have more money to spend on casual stuff. So I guess that's why it's so great, because it's like, yeah, you know what? No, but it's really interesting, because it's like I have a lot of people play Commander, and there's a huge kind of following for it now. And even a lot of the group, you know, and people that I've met over the various, you know, time of doing this, you know, will kind of, yeah, you know what? $150 guy is Cradle. You know, I only really need one of. Why not? Right? Like, whereas before, it's like, oh, I'm not gonna buy that. I'd rather just buy a standard deck, right? When people are kind of younger and they don't have that kind of, like, I'm not gonna spend $150 on one card.
EDH is just 10 times more fun than playing standard.
Yeah, so there you go. Yeah, so it's like, you know what? I'll buy myself the Cradle. Why not?
Yeah. You're going to have it forever, and you have an expectation that you're going to be able to use this card for a very long time.
Exactly.
It's just all around just more fun. And plus, you don't have to be a near genius to play the game anymore, where Magic, there's so many people playing it that there's going to be those few people that are just smarter than everybody else or is going to win. And it's no fun to go to a tournament when you're going to get beat all the time. Where with EDH, you can come up with some random idea, and you're playing as a lot of other people with random ideas, and you have a good chance of winning. You don't have to be analyzing and everything else. It's play testing like crazy, and you're going to win a lot, and this is going to be a lot of fun. And it's just great. It is. Yeah. It is just an awesome situation.
Yeah. I mean, not so to say that it's like it doesn't still exist, but yeah, go ahead, Tark.
No, speaking of $150 Gaia's Cradles, obviously there was a time, Gabe, when Gaia's Cradle was, you know, $20, and now we live in a world with $150 Gaia's Cradles, and that's due to, obviously, that's the game's grown, but, you know, that kind of leads us to this little, you know, you're on a Magic Finance quote-unquote cast. Mm-hmm. So what is your, you know, maybe you can talk to us about what you think about Magic since you started to now. It's become this, people are investing in it. They're, you know, people are treating it as almost like equivalent to a you know, stock commodity. Mm-hmm. What's your perspective on this whole, on Magic Finance and just making money in Magic, people that use it as an investment vehicle? What do you think about all that?
Well, I believe the vintage cards are a great investment type item in that, well, here's the deal. If Magic stays popular, Alpha, Beta, and Limited cards are only going to go through the roof. They're not going down there anytime soon. They won't. They're going to continue to go up and up and up. The nostalgia factor for these cards are through the roof. And they're established collectible at this point. But it's all based on what does Magic, is Magic still around? If Magic goes away, then I don't see them continuing the way they do. But I also don't see Magic going anywhere either. So I think it's really solid. Alpha and Beta card, vintage cards are rock solid, going to continue to go up. Now, of course, you know, when you talk about newer cards, we're in an era of a Chronicles coming out every single year. So that it makes for a much more interesting situation. The cards, I'm not sure what to say, but it's you can't guarantee the value of a modern card. Who knows what they're gonna do, but you need them to play with, they're gonna retain their value. It's not like they're gonna completely become worthless, but at any point, you gotta know that this card could halve in price. It's weird.
So, and this is great, because this leads to a question that we ask nearly basically every vendor. But, you know, you came from the era of build a collection up, sit on it, and now we live in the era of a Chronicles every year. Mm-hmm. So, if someone was like, hey, you know, again, I'm doing it Gabe style, I'm in my basement, I'm grinding away. Would you recommend adopting primarily like a turn and burn volume mentality, where, look, you know, get the stuff in and get it out. Yeah, your margin might be thin, but you compound you compound your margin over quick turnover? Or would you say, you know, somewhere in the middle where, you know, you kind of divide it? Because again, vintage ABU stuff is for I would say a good portion of our listeners is probably the barrier to entry to that is very high. And, you know, getting particularly graded stuff is going to be difficult. But a lot of our listeners do live in the world of, yeah, I might be able to pick up a couple of those things, but I live mostly in the world of modern and standard.
Mm-hmm.
And so for those guys, would you recommend turn and burn? Would you recommend splitting it down the middle, kind of keep some stash away? Or are you still in the world of, you know what, throw things in the closet and just let that kind of accrue over time?
I don't have a crystal ball next to me to look at, unfortunately.
Well, just as a general strategy with the current marketplace. That was good.
Yeah.
I don't have an answer, unfortunately. I don't know. I'm sorry.
Okay.
All right.
That's fair enough. That's fair. But do you think, at least it seems, because from what Chaz and I see, it seems like, because like you said, we have reprints and there's so many of them, it seems like getting things in and turning them over, at least you're mitigating, you're mitigating your risk a little bit better. Do you agree with that or you know?
I'm sorry, but basically, I don't know. All I know from ABU game standpoint is I have to have all the cards in at all the time. And, I have no choice of what the price is. I just price them at whatever they're going at. And I have no other option. If that ends up being not a money making way to do it, I'm burnt. There is no solution. I have to have the cards in stock. I have no choice what they sell for. If they all just continue to tank, then I guess I'm in trouble. But the thing is, Magic in general, look at it as an overall, not on an individual card basis. And think of it like this. Are cards in general have a certain – is the value of Magic cards in general going up, or is the value in general going down? Because if it's –
What do you see? That's what I'm curious.
Okay. So I think for the most part, when you see cards going down in value, there's other cards going up in value. It's really hard to see those. And it could be that one card drops, say, $10 in value, and 100 cards go up 10 cents in value. And it is really difficult to notice why those other ones. So if you just have a bunch of cards in stock, then you're going to be protected. When one card goes down, hopefully the other ones they're going to go up so that you're not totally burnt. And I think that's generally what happens anyways. And especially, like, yes, when a new Modern Masters comes out, there's that time where all the people get freaked out and the values just plummet for a little while. But they always come back. When you're playing, I guess it's kind of when you're playing the I'm going to sell at the right time, I'm going to buy at the right time thing, you're going to go crazy. I don't know. Maybe people probably haven't figured out. I like I said, I don't do it that way. I'm not on a speculating situation for myself where I'm trying to figure out when's the best time to sell a particular card. I just got to have everything. But overall, the cards continue to retain their value, and so that's so I'm okay, I guess.
This is really, really interesting, because this is a very unique perspective. This like idea of I'm large, I literally ingest everything and have everything, and if things are going up, I'm doing well. If things are going down, we got a problem. So I don't know if you can speak on this at all, but from where you sit and from what you've seen, is the chart trending up? Like your general inventory, right? You have everything. Are things looking like there's growth, or are things looking a little soft? Like, can you speak to that at all?
I don't have the exact data. I guess my feeling is it's probably slightly going down in value, but maybe it depends on the time of the year too. That's also important to consider. Things sell, or things have a lot more value at the beginning of the year than they do at the end of the year. It has been for me at least. So there's also seasonal things, but overall, it's not like the game is crashing or anything like that. It's healthy. The cards still have their value. People are buying. There's a lot. It's all about volume, selling, like having a lot of transactions. If you're making 5%, 10%, 20% on each deal, then all you got to do is just do a ton of deals.
All right, so your crystal ball did actually speak then a little bit. So
maybe.
So as long as you're doing good volume, you should be okay.
Yeah, I would say that's pretty accurate. Yeah, for sure.
Okay. Cool. Well, then naturally, then that goes. That's the next question is, how do you think Wizards is doing with how they're handling the game. Like, we have a Chronicles every year. I mean, when, you know, this is a new era. Are you on board with everything they're doing with the aggressive reprints and like the increased volume and product line? Like, how do you feel about all this?
I don't, gosh, I'll tell you what I do like first. I think that the masterpiece cards are excellent. I think they're great for the game. Cool. I think that when people have a chance to open a pack and get a $150 card, people love it. And it's not even like crazy odds for it to happen. It happens all the time. It was interesting. They, you know, what they do, Zendikar and then the Expeditions and Return to Zendikar.
Yep.
It was so much fun opening those packs because you have a payoff. There's a payoff to be had. You can hit something sweet. And that anticipation is just makes it so much more fun to open the product. Then they had the set, I can't remember what it was, a few sets in a row, maybe, where there was just nothing besides the best thing you could hope for is like a foil mythic rare, right? There was no masterpiece type thing. It was just after you tasted the chance of getting something special all the time, those boxes just weren't, they weren't as fun to open. And so now I think it was a really good move to do those masterpiece cards. I think it has made it for a much more fun product. Now, I really don't know what my opinion is on the reprint sets every year. I understand their predicament. They want to keep this modern format going, and they want it to be at a price point that people could reasonably get into. So what, I don't know any other answer than to reprint the cards or make it another rotating format like standard. And I don't know if that's the right way to go. I really think Legacy is great. I think there's a place for the formats like Legacy and Type 1 where the cards, your decks are going to be insanely expensive to create. I think there's nothing wrong with having some formats like that. But I think it is important that you have formats where the cost to entry is achievable by the average player. So that's important too. And Modern is kind of like in no man's land.
Interesting. So you think that the reprints that they're doing, I mean, do you sense is there any long-term damage that they could be doing to the secondary market? Or do you think this is literally just their response to the market becoming as robust as it has become?
Yeah, at this point, they haven't went crazy with it, in my opinion. There's enough people out there to absorb the cards. I mean, it's been proven. The cards aren't worthless. Dark Confidant, Tarmogoyf, these aren't $10 cards or $5 cards. They are still, you know, there's still a lot of money. I think it's pretty much proven that these Modern Masters, Eternal Masters sets have not killed the value of cards. Well, here's the other thing. If you have a card that's $100 and then it goes down to $50 because it's reprinted in a Modern Masters set or something, yes, your current stock gets hit. Obviously, you lost half your value on whatever copies of those cards you have. But now, how many more are you going to sell going forward because that card's $50 instead of being $100?
Yep.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, I was just going to ask. I mean, even for you, you kind of do, you know, as a big store, I know you have to have everything. I mean, is it easier for you just knowing your customer base? Like, is that certainly the case for you where, you know, you have a $50, I'm just using this as an example, I used this before, you know, you had a $50 Damnation just hanging out in the case, no one wants it, but they do want it for a Commander, but they can't justify the $50. Mm-hmm. It gets reprinted, goes down to $20-$25, now you're moving them. So that's, you know, yes, for the people that bought in at $50, it sucks, but now, like, you get to sell more, people get to absorb more of them.
My answer to that is the guy had it priced wrong at $50. You should never have cards not moving. doing it wrong.
Right. Oh, so there you go. Yeah.
Right.
So he kind of does agree with us, Stark.
If you're moving in volume, then you basically bake in some loss on some cards, but you're moving at such a volume that your overall margin stays net positive.
If you're staying up late at night worried that your cards are going to go down in value, you're in the wrong business.
Wow.
It's gonna happen.
Yeah. It is gonna happen. You know, and at the same point, I mean, you're not the first vendor. I mean, even other vendors, I mean, well, you kind of alluded to this earlier. Like, if someone buys up all your stock of a card, I mean, it just happens, right? Like, so you're on to the next, like, well, I just need to get it back in stock and sell it for the new price.
Yeah. You know, and that's the thing. I consider people that are speculators, people that buy us out, I consider them good customers. I'm not offended. I welcome them. I want them to buy as much cards as they possibly could want, but I want them to understand that if I decide that I don't want to sell you every single copy, I might limit to some degree, but I love the big orders. And the truth is we very rarely do limits and things like that. We take pretty much all the orders. But just understand that you have to be reasonable. If a card gets banned, you're gonna try to sell us 100 copies of this card before we got 5 minutes after it gets banned and we didn't have a chance to update the price. I mean, give me a break.
Yeah.
And is with the new website, are you gonna have quantity limitations on how many you can sell, or is your website now going to allow for nearly as many, but the price may adjust? Like, do you have a policy in place for that?
It'll be listed how many we'll accept. Okay. So yeah.
Okay. Cool. Well, it's awesome. Really all fascinating, and I'm kind of curious to know if you have a perspective on this. Like, you've watched the game evolve from day one and where it's at now, and obviously gaming has evolved in general. I mean, the new generation is on their mobile, they're playing video games, they're playing Hearthstone. Do you think Magic is going to be in a great, like, do you have a sense, obviously you don't know crystal balls here, but mm-hmm. you have a sense that Magic is moving in a good place, it's still healthy and growing, and that it's got a place in this evolving world of gaming? Like, it's not mm-hmm. going to be, people aren't going to be like, I don't want to touch physical cards anymore, yeah. I just want to play on Hearthstone. Like, what do you think about that?
I'm not worried about it at all. I think that physical items are not going to go away anytime soon. People love to get together. They love to have something in their hands, and they love to play board games. They love to play card games. I really don't think that this, like, it's all going to go digital anytime soon. Who knows what 25, 50 years from now is going to look like? It could be a completely different world. Anytime soon, in the reasonable future, people are going to be playing physical stuff for sure. I'm very confident in that.
Cool. And do you think that Magic overall is healthy and thriving?
I do. I kind of was worried a little bit over the last few years about it. But I think they turned things around a little bit. I do think that maybe they're printing a few too many sets. People can't afford to buy as much as they're producing. And maybe that's what was the latest? It was like Arch Enemy or no? What was it with the last specialty set with all Plane Chase, right? The new Plane Chase anthology thing. Right. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
So up until that one, well, I don't know up until that one, but normally when a set like that would come out, people would buy as many as they possibly could from their wholesaler. This is instantly going to have value to them. But they've printed way too many. There was way too many available, and the price point was way too high. And they've been printing so many sets that it's like no one even cared. So yeah. I go back and forth because we don't know Wizards of the Coast books. At least I don't. I don't know how it works exactly, but I assume their goal is to sell as many boxes as possible of whatever. And I think they're probably doing pretty well. So I can't blame them for what they're doing either.
Okay. Awesome. Awesome. Well, Gabe, man, this was a lot. This is awesome, man. This is a ton. And it's super, super cool to hear what you're doing with the website and everything that you're doing.
Absolutely.
Like, how you're innovating on trade credit and all that. I mean, not having a flat rate is really something new. That's going to be, I'm fascinated to see how that plays out. And I'm sure you guys have done some internal testing to see, how that's going to work. And I'm just really, really excited to see how that's going to play out.
I do think something that we haven't seen before. I mean, really, I know you guys have really pushed the credit in the past. I mean, your guys are up to 50% now, like you said before, but this is something that I've not seen anybody else doing.
It'll just be a much fairer and better service to people who just want to trade in. And I think that, yeah, I hope that people can understand it, because it is going to be some learning curve to it, because it isn't what anyone else does. And so when they look at the site and they see, well, what percentage do I get more than cash in trade? And it doesn't say that. It says, here's your cash price, here's your trade price. And they're like, well, what does that mean? And then to explain to them that you also can get a 20 to 20, let's say it's 25%. You can get a 25% bonus towards anything in the store. How do you explain that to people so they understand that that doesn't mean that it's 25% more than that trade credit number on there either? So I've got to figure out some wording and how to make people understand the new mechanics. Because yeah, it's going to be a lot different. But I think the fundamentals of it will make it a better situation for everybody to trade in. I'm very excited for it.
Well, I can say, I mean, Gabe, you know, you know my account behavior. I've used you guys so much and had nothing but positive customer service and always willing to be flexible and work with me. So, you know, if to any of the listeners, if you haven't, which I'm sure everyone probably has, but if you haven't used ABU Games yet, you need to go check it out. Either buy or try their buy list. Like the guys are just awesome. So
yeah, absolutely.
Thanks so much.
Thanks.
Yeah, Gabe, this has been incredible. I really appreciate you coming on and giving us the time. Absolutely, everybody should, if they haven't already, definitely use the service. Can't wait for the new website. It's going to be great. Looking forward to hearing more, and hopefully we can do this again, Gabe. This has been a really great perspective, really unique. And, you know, we've talked to other vendors, and, you know, I have to say that, you know, some of your insight is really a lot different and really enlightening. Really enlightening.
Thanks. Well, I really, you know, I think it'd be cool if I could come back after the site goes live.
Yeah, let's do that.
And share.
Oh, yeah, I love that. Love that.
Sure. Cool. Yeah, let's do that. That sounds like a great. Just let us know and we'll set you back up.
Sounds good.
Awesome. So before everyone, oh, go ahead, Dark.
Oh no. I was just gonna say, you know, I think one of the most refreshing things that people are gonna hear was that, you know, you were one of us, right? You were bootstrapping Grindr, and you built something amazing. So if anything, you know, that could hopefully kind of inspire, you know, people that, you know, hey, you know, this game and this hobby has a lot to offer, and everyone has a unique story, and it's very relatable. So yeah, I think that's going to be really great.
Yeah. Thanks. I think another thing that people will always really like to hear is that, you know, your store, you don't really turn away anybody, and you love the fact that even some of the individual investors, I should say, you know, you take their orders just like everybody else. You like their business. And I think, that's really going to be, some good things to hear for when everyone hears this cast.
Cool.
Yep. So before we head out, Tark, where can they find you on the internet?
Yep, I'm at @the_Tark on TARK on Twitter. I also do admin work over at the MTG Finance Central Facebook page. You can chat with me anytime there, and I work with QS.
Awesome. Gabe, where can they find you?
Oh, I don't know. There's a website out there you might be able to buy or trade some cards at, abugames.com.
There you go. Me, as always, at ChazVMTG on Twitter is probably the best way to find me. You can find me writing articles on QuietSpeculation.com, insider articles, the podcast, Discord. I'm everywhere. So, and then the MTG Goldfish podcast as well. So, Gabe, thank you very much. We will absolutely have you back once the new site launches. Can't wait to be a part of it and use it. And continue using your service. So thanks for giving us your time.
Yep, thank you.
Yeah,
all right,
so much, Gabe.
This is going to be the QS Cast signing out. Take care, everyone.